Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What's wrong with having only one child? As potential parents put off having babies, more single people are parenting alone, and families consider the time, money, and energy required to raise a child in the 21st century. Single-child families are the fastest-growing family type in the United States. But despite the growing number of kids without siblings, negative stereotypes persist about spoiled or selfish or lonely only children, putting pressure on parents who decide their family is complete after the birth of a single child. Susan Newman is a social psychologist and author. She looks at the stereotypes and the realities of only children and their families in her new book, The Case for the Only Child, Your Essential Guide. Susan, welcome to Think.
Good to be here, Chris.
Why is it that people hang on to ideas about only children that may not, in fact, bear truth?
Well, they absolutely don't bear truth, if they ever did. But people, it's the same as with any ethnic group, any stereotype. Once you get it in your head, it lingers. And the issue with ethnic groups, with only children, is that people don't look at individuals. They look at the collective group and what they have heard or know about the collective group. And when you hear something the first time, that seems to stick, and there have been studies done on this, and it doesn't matter who told you, it just kind of lingers and stays in your brain that, in the example of only children are spoiled, and they're lonely, and they're selfish, and they're aggressive and bossy. But in fact, there have been hundreds of studies done, and that isn't true.
Well, you know, the funny thing about naming off those characteristics, there are plenty of kids with siblings who might have those qualities, and people don't assume it's because they have a sibling.
That's true. When people say, I'm definitely not going to have one child because, and rattle off some of these statistics, these labels, I say, look around at your friends who have more than one child. I bet within that group, you can find one that is lonely or spoiled. And as far as the spoiled goes, in American society today, many, if not most, children are spoiled because, we're in this culture of yes parenting, and it's very difficult for parents to say no to their children. So when they see the latest gizmo and iPod and iPad and whatever else, parents crumble. And it isn't an issue of how many children are in the house. It's really more an issue of this yes culture we're living in.
So let's talk about socialization, because this is something that people tend to worry about, that, once kids arrive at school, they will have problems making friends with other children. What does the research say?
Well, the research, interestingly, says quite the opposite. In 2004, a researcher at Ohio State did a study of very young only children in kindergarten, and he found that they had some difficulties. But they had difficulties, and this goes back to our original point about how stereotypes linger.
Mm-hmm.
The teachers were assessing them,
huh.
And many of the teachers probably have held on to the stereotypes about only children. Last year, the same researcher and a colleague did a similar study in which they asked middle school and high school children to assess their friends. And it turned out that the only children had just as many friends, were just as well liked, as children with siblings. So, when parents worry about having an only child and the child will have difficulty making friends, it doesn't hold up. And there's another reason it doesn't hold up, and that's because only children realize that their friends are important, that those are their play dates, those are their companions, and those are, in many cases, what would be the equivalent of a sibling substitute. So, you know, in my studies and interviewing only children, and parents of only children, I've really learned that only children put a great value on friendship, and they will go out of their way to be sure they don't damage the relationships.
So that also speaks to the issue, you know, many people say that siblings are vital to learn how to manage conflict. But I guess if you're spending a lot of time with your friends, eventually you get the same lessons.
Yeah, in the 6 to 8 hours you're out and about, and now I think it's many more hours with all the after-school activities,
mm-hmm.
You learn how to stand your ground, to ask for what you want. If you're an only child, I mean, there's no question that you can pick up all those socialization skills quickly and as efficiently as if you had a sibling. You know, and sometimes these sibling relationships can be quite damaging if there's too much squabbling and, you know, one sibling is overriding another sibling on a steady basis. So, you know, and then there's all the issues of sibling abuse. So, you know, in a lot of ways, siblings aren't all they're cracked up to be.
Well,
and
yeah.
I might add, I have one. And I have a great relationship with him, and he actually lives in Dallas.
Hmm. You know, it is interesting because I've been lucky with my kids as well, but there's no guarantee that they will get along well as children.
There is absolutely no guarantee. And the intense fighting is often the reason that people decide to have one child. If they've had a sibling, and even as they go into an adulthood, which is usually when sibling relationships steady, even out and they get closer, many people are who are in bad childhood sibling relationships choose to have one child for that very reason.
They don't want to put their child through what they endured.
Yeah, and statistically, there's a very dark side to siblings in terms of the pushing, shoving, biting. The percents are pretty high. You know, it goes up as high as 80%+ when you add in the verbal abuse between two siblings.
How do the relationships, if they differ, how do they differ between only children and their parents as opposed to children with siblings and their parents?
The relationship between only children and their parents tends to be closer, you know, for obvious reasons. There's mm-hmm. the three of you sitting at the dinner table, the three of you going on a vacation together, although I often advise taking a friend along, if you can, for your child. So it's closer, and in one respect, that's very good. But also parents run the risk of, because of that closeness, putting their child in a fishbowl mm-hmm. and seeing absolutely everything they do. So you want to back off a little as parents of onlys and not see everything.
That's really interesting because another issue that people worry about is an only child developing a sense of independence, but it sounds like maybe that's a parenting concern more than a concern of the child, him or herself.
Yeah, that is a parenting concern. But one of the stigmas about only children is that they're very dependent when, in fact, because of the friendships they want to form and they want to be out and about with other children, they become quite independent and self-sufficient.
So I have to ask you about this, Susan. Who is your audience for this book? Are you writing to parents who are trying to decide whether or not they want a second child?
It's to parents who are on the fence. They're not sure what they want to do. It's to people who are starting out thinking about their family. And it's also directed at people who are getting a lot of pressure mm-hmm. to have another child. You know, people say horrendous things when you have one child. I was talking to one woman who said, well, I just don't believe in only children. I mean, that's astounding to me. But, that's how our culture has been so brainwashed about only children and believing that the perfect family size is two children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not. taking, you know, people are not considering what is going on socially, economically, and, you know, and health issues these days. So, you know, all those factors.
Well, why do we care? I mean, you know, I have multiple children, but I have no problem with people choosing to have one or none. Why do people think it's their right to tell anybody else what to do?
People love to tell other people what to do. And I think people believe that their way is best.
Yeah.
Many people, you know, assume that they're right and everybody else is wrong. And particularly when it comes to this family size question, if you have two children, you can come up with a host of reasons why your best friend should have a second child.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just not leave her alone, saying you have to do this, it's selfish, you can't have just one child, every child needs a sibling. So people get in their heads. And when they're having a wonderful relationship with their two children, get along famously, and they play together and they're best friends, well, they think that everybody's going to, if they have a second child or they have three children, that their children will get along famously.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked a lot about the reasons that for a child it might make sense to have only one. Let's talk a little bit about parents here. You point out the very real fact that a lot of women are waiting until later in life to have a first child or an only child, and sometimes that helps to make the decision for them.
That's true. I mean, if you look at the statistics, let's say between 1980 and 2004, the number of women giving birth at 30 has doubled, but at age 35, it's quadrupled. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, it's tripled.
Mm-hmm.
And at 40, or after 40, it's almost quadrupled. So there's no, you know, there's absolutely no question that our women are waiting longer. They're staying in school longer, you know, hence postponing getting married and starting families. And you know, when you wait longer, you can run again. You know, face infertility the first time for the first baby, secondary infertility once you've had your first child. So age is really limiting the number of children that people can have, and there are even age limits on adoption. You know, how old parents can be in certain countries, and the pool of available children to adopt, particularly from foreign countries, it keeps shrinking. You know, they close borders at a whim. So, you know, that those are all, you know, circumstances that are increasing the number of only children.
So it may be that people just need to be told it's okay. If you turn out to be the parent of one, you haven't done anything wrong for that one child.
Oh, it's absolutely okay. You know, but you, going back to the parents themselves, you know, there's a lot of guilt and shame attached to having one child if you've had infertility problems. And primarily because we've all been brainwashed into believing that, you know, having two children is the ideal, perfect family.
Let me jump in here. We're going to take a quick break. My guest this hour is social psychologist and author Susan Newman. Her new book is called The Case for the Only Child, Your Essential Guide. If you would like to contribute to the conversation, we'd love to hear from you now. You can call in at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a self-designed graduate program that allows you the chance to meet the challenges of society. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is social psychologist and author Susan Newman. Her new book is called The Case for the Only Child, Your Essential Guide. Join our conversation now by calling in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Susan, sometimes there are couples and one partner really wants more children and one partner thinks one is perfect. Can you talk about some constructive ways to have this conversation as honestly as possible?
Yeah, there's a chapter in the book called Divided We Stand. Yeah. And let me tell you, they are divided.
Mm-hmm.
You know, particularly men think that well, my mother had three children or five children, and you won't have more than one. So it almost becomes a standoff, and why won't you, you know, go ahead and have a second child? It also stems from the boy for you, girl for me fantasy of the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Women tend to believe that they're better parents for girls, and guys think they're better parents for boys. So that leads to a lot of differences. The best thing to do is talk about this before you get married. That doesn't mean you will stick to what you decide. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people have said, I don't want any children. And then, you know, as women reach their mid-30s, they say, wait a minute, I do want to be a mother. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have a back and forth. Generally, if you talk about it in calm tones and don't let your emotions, even though this is such an emotional issue, interfere with your actual marriage success of your relationship as two people, I think most people resolve it, and the outside circumstances are often more the deciding factor than what either husband or wife or partners want. It's more the economics, living arrangements, fertility issues, that and cost of raising children that actually influence the decision than the fact that husband and wife or partner and partner are not on the same page.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to the phones now. We have Robert on the line in Dallas. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great, thanks.
I just had a quick question slash kind of wanted the author to comment a little bit about, she was talking earlier about kind of how we're getting older and older before we have our first child and having fewer and fewer children, but it seems that that is such a large function of socioeconomic status and income. Really more than just a broad brushstroke. And I just want to see kind of what she thinks about that, about the concept of kind of breeding out the upper class as we're having fewer and fewer children.
Well, the people that are having, and it's a 2% of the population in the upper classes, higher income levels, they are the ones that are having three children, and you're seeing an increase in three children. But in the lower income areas and middle income areas, money is an issue, and it is a factor in this increase in one-child families.
Yeah, and, you know, we've all heard the statistics about how expensive it is to raise a child, but it's one of those things that as childhood lasts longer and longer and into their 20s, parents are supporting them, they really have to think about this carefully as they consider having a second or more.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in the middle-income classes, it costs $12,000 a year per child.
And that's without private school or anything?
Absolutely, without private school. And if you multiply that, you're in the $286,000 cost per child to age 18. And my favorite statistic of that number is that 46,000 of that is for food. But what's curious about that is as your income level goes up, you spend more on your child. So if you're in a higher income bracket, you know, to cost to raise your child to 18 can go up to close to $500,000.
Hmm.
And I don't think people realize that. And, of course, no one wants to put a price tag on their children. But, you know, given especially today the economy, more and more people are thinking about cost as a factor. Because let's say, for example, you have to move because you need more space for a second child. That's a huge chunk of additional costs. And, you know, depending on job security and other income, for many, many people, that is a consideration.
How often do people think about whether or not they will burden their only child with having to care for them when they're older?
Very often.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the key arguments for having a second and more children. Who will take care of you when you're aging and they don't want to burden their one child? But what typically happens, and this is certainly not true in all families, but in many, many families, one child, it's usually the female, if there's a female offspring, who lives closest and is most financially able, is the like the only child responsible for her parents.
Hmm.
So while this is a major concern for the for people who are thinking about family size, there are a lot of things you can do. Building a strong friend support network. For your only child, cultivating your child's relationship with her siblings, aunts, uncles, or any other distant relatives. And those people will be there for your only child. And then, of course, there's all the practical things to do. Be sure your paperwork's in order, your living will, if you're arranging for long-term care, that kind of thing. So, while it's a strong consideration, it's not the key factor in whether people are deciding whether to have one child or three children.
Susan Newman is my guest. Her new book is called The Case for the Only Child. Let's go back to the phones now and speak with Zan in Dallas. Hey, Zan.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead, please.
Great show. I am a longtime Dallas resident. We are in a partnered relationship. My partner and I adopted our son 5 years ago, and he has an untraditional family at best in this part of the world. But we've thought about having other children, but obviously it takes extraordinary measures for us to be able to do that. We have to do it through adoption. And the book sounds very interesting, and a lot of the issues that you seem to have addressed for straight couples would also apply to gay couples, because we have exactly the same concerns. And I was just wondering if your guest could comment on that.
Thanks for your call.
Yes, all of the issues apply to any family configuration, gay, straight, it doesn't matter, because the issues pertain to raising your child and interacting with your child and how happy you are. I think what people who say your child needs a sibling really don't understand is that it's not the number of siblings that a child has that ultimately influences how he or she turns out. It's really the parents and the parenting skills that they use to raise this child. But in terms of your caller, all the issues are the same. And he brought up another point, in my head anyway, that the number of people getting married today is on the decline. There are more women having babies without having partners. So that also is influencing this trend toward one child.
Mm-hmm. Talk about this, Susan. How often are our parents on the same page about one child seems perfect until, you know, a four-year-old or a six-year-old or whatever age says, why can't I have a brother or sister?
Oh, and they do. Not mm-hmm. all of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's so guilt-provoking for parents. Oh,
like there's not enough guilt out there, right?
Right. Just put that on top. That's sort of the icing on the cake, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to tell your child, this is the way we want our family. I mean, and this is what you should be saying to your child if you are stopping at one. We like our family the way it is. With older children, you can explain that you can't have any more babies, and depending on their age, you can get into the issue of, yes, we tried fertility treatments and they didn't work. But when you're talking with, you know, a four-year-old, it's quite difficult. What to say, you know, you want to always be honest, but what you don't realize, or what parents don't realize, is that somewhere around age 8 or 9, especially if your child has been playing at the at homes of his friends where there are multiple siblings, all of a sudden this child who had to have a brother or a sister realizes how good he or she has it and stops asking.
Mm-hmm.
Some parents, you know, with a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, who don't want another child, can explain, well, you have to understand that if we have a baby and you have a baby brother or sister, you are going to be sharing mommy and daddy. You are going to be sharing your toys, possibly your room. And that often changes even the youngest child's mind. They're not so keen on sharing their parents once. You know, and as we know, the reality when a new baby walks in can be pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those are all ways to handle a young child or an older child asking for a sibling. But as I said, after about 8 or 9, they stop asking.
Back to the phones now. This time we'll speak with John in Fort Worth. Hey, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a comment briefly, and maybe she'd have something to say about it. Growing up, me and my sister, I only have one sibling, and she's 3 years older than I am, and you couldn't find two more diametrically opposed personalities. Basically resulted in we battled nonstop. I mean, when we were out of school for the summertime, I owned the backyard, she owned the house, and we just basically tried not to interact with each other because it was a nightmare. But as we got older, things kind of mellowed out and somewhat kind of found an even keel with the relationship. But then at some point, we just drifted apart. She was born in Fort Worth, so we really don't have much contact with each other. And me and my wife just had our first child. She's 3 months old. And so we've been kind of discussing whether or not we wanted to have another one. And in my mind, on some level, that relationship that I had with my sister plays into the decision of not wanting to have another child.
You know, John, we're losing you on the cell phone, but I think we can we'll get a response from Susan about that. How often do you hear that from people, Susan?
Very often. You know, and there occasionally is one sibling who makes this enormous effort to make the relationship work,
mm-hmm.
goes, you know, over bounds to try to salvage it, and sometimes it's best just to walk away for everybody's peace of mind and say, yes, I have a sibling, but my friends are going to be there for me. You know, and you know, that's what only children have, their friends. You know, one of my favorite subjects in the study for this book was a woman, and she and her, what turned out to be her best friend. The two mothers were pregnant at the same time, and they stayed friendly from, you know, essentially from birth. So through into their 60s when one of the women died, one of the friend died, and my subject, whose name is Cheryl in the book, Cheryl stepped up like any sister and took care of her then teenage, her friend's teenage daughter. She took her shopping for a prom dress. They continued the holiday celebrations as if her best friend were still alive.
Hmm.
And that is a strong an example of friendships can be stronger than blood ties.
Yeah, so it's essentially about creating your family where maybe you don't have one naturally.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. So we have an email here from Jessica who writes, I'm an only child who just got married a month ago. My husband has a sister 7 years older and they have no relationship. I want multiple kids since I was an only child. My husband says siblings are overrated. How should I discuss it with him?
Well, I mean, that is such a good example of the grass is always greener.
Uh-huh.
No matter what you have. In the house next door, it looks a little better.
Uh-huh.
I think she has to discuss it with him. I mean, they just got married, so they have time to figure it out.
Yeah.
And come to an agreement. You know, maybe what's right for them is two children and not her many children that she wants.
Mm-hmm.
Or it may be circumstances after they have, you know, and this happened to a lot of people, after one child, they realize they can't handle another.
Right.
It's too stressful because of work responsibilities or financial issues. So you, if you talk about it, there's no right or wrong answer. I'm not advocating everybody who's starting a family have one child. What I'm really saying is you need to think about, you know, exactly the size that's going to work for you and make you a happy parent.
Susan Newman is my guest. She's a social psychologist and author of the new book, The Case for the Only Child, Your Essential Guide. We'll take more of your calls after the break. The number, 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a self-designed graduate program that allows you the chance to meet the challenges of society. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Social psychologist and author Susan Newman is my guest this hour. Her new book is called The Case for the Only Child, Your Essential Guide. We'll go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Mike on the line in Dallas. Hello, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
We wanted to have more than one child. We couldn't for medical reasons. And that was 17 years ago, and my daughter's a great kid. She's not the least bit lonely. She's very loyal to her friends, and she has good friends. And the other thing is we were able to invest a lot of money in her education from you know, preschool to the end of college will be over $100,000. And so there's something to be said, I think, for the resources you can put into the life of a single child or, you know, maybe two children. I want to make a case for that. My daughter's not the least bit lonely.
Well, that's great to hear. It sounds like she's turned out really well. Thanks so much for your call, Mike.
You
know, Mike's call brings up another point about only children. Even without the extra investments that Mike was talking about, in achievement, motivation, and intelligence, only children do score higher. And that's obvious because, you know, it makes sense because they have their full parents' full attention, you know, and it's the dinner table, for example, the children are not chattering away to each other and the parents to each other, but rather everybody's talking to everybody.
You have a great list in the book of famous only children. I don't know if you have a copy of it in front of you, but some of your favorite examples, maybe?
Well, it would have to be Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
That would be one. And I don't have a copy in front of me.
Well, I'll read some of them off, and these may not be your favorites, but Gandhi was an only child.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Laura Bush, Candace Bergen, Sammy Davis Jr., let's see, who else? Isaac Newton was an only child.
Yeah, what's interesting about that list is there are a lot of people in the creative fields on that list.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of musicians, a lot of artists, singers, that would go musicians, and a lot of writers, like John Updike's on that list. Okay, you can keep reading.
Oh, well, now, so let's see, I've closed the page, but
okay.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was one, I think. Gregory Peck, Cole Porter, Elvis Presley, Condoleezza Rice.
Right. The tennis player Maria Sharapova.
Mm-hmm. Tommy Lee Jones, Alicia Keys, Carol Burnett. So essentially, you know, we don't necessarily think about people's, you know, backgrounds once they become famous. But it doesn't sound like that has held any of these people back.
Being an only child?
Yeah.
Definitely not. And Natalie Portman mm-hmm. was another one is on the list.
Yeah.
And when she won the Oscar this year, she attributed a lot of it to her parents. Or almost totally to the fact that she was an only child and to her parents. And one of her comments that stood out to me was, if I had had brothers or sisters, I wouldn't be here with this award because my mother was able to take me from audition to audition and so forth. So, you know, in terms of what your caller Mike had said, you know, there are extreme advantages in that sense of getting your parents extra time and attention and resources.
It's funny, I think she was pregnant when she accepted that award, wasn't she?
Oh, she definitely was.
Yeah.
It'll be curious to see how many children she has.
We'll have to keep watching that. Let's go back to the phones now, and we'll speak to Natalie in Wichita Falls. Hey, Natalie.
Hello, Chris. Another wonderful show.
Thank you.
All right. A question and comment to your guest there. Could she speak to the correlation between the supposed trending toward these smaller families and our burgeoning U.S. population, and also the relevance, if there is any, with the Malthusian doctrine? And I will listen for the answer or reply.
Thanks for your call.
All right. Well, the population growth is because they're just the population's larger, and there are more people having more, you know, having a child or more. This isn't just a trend in the United States. This is a worldwide phenomenon in developed countries. You know, in Spain and Portugal, 30% of families have one child. In Italy, India, France, Germany, there are, you know, one child is the increasingly chosen family size. And England is calling itself, like China for decades, the one-child nation, because there are 46% of families, almost half, are one single-child families. So it isn't just here. It's everywhere.
And you say that it's important, although, of course, you'll probably have friends who have multiple children, but it's good for families with one child to find other families to hang out with who also have one child.
Yeah, that's important. And if you can find that, the key to the whole socialization issue with children is to get them socialized out with other children early. And in this today, that's quite simple because you have daycare play groups, mommy and me groups, when they're very young. And now you have all these, you know, Little League and so forth. The other, you know, to keep your child out with children, invite people over to your house. You know, when you feel your child's old enough, have sleepovers. But there was one other point I wanted to make about that, and it went out of my head, but it'll come back to me.
Come back when it comes back. Just let us know what it is.
Okay.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we'll speak with Anka in Dallas. Hi, Anka.
Hi, this is Anka here. I'm one of the youngest of four siblings, and I had a wonderful childhood growing up with my sisters. We used to have a lot of fun. I'm still very close to them, but I have one son, and he's now 22 and a very well-rounded kid. But like your author said, growing up, I always felt guilty that he did not have any siblings and he did not have the kind of fun that I used to have growing up. The way I tried to get around it was he's very close to his first cousins, my sister's kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like your guest to comment on that, please.
Could you rephrase what she's asking?
The connection wasn't great. She was saying that she, you know, grew up very close to her. There were four kids in her family. She grew up very close to her siblings. She has one son who's now 22, and she felt a little guilty when he was growing up, although he's turned out fine. But she, as you mentioned earlier, had her son spend a lot of time with her sister's kids.
Yeah, well, that's part of socialization. Her son has a strong bond to his cousins. And that is very important because as he gets older, he will have someone to lean on who shares his history. And that seems to be very important to be able to go back and say, as I often do with my brother, we talk about things that went on when we were kids. There's something about the traditions and the laughter and the fun that's important. But you can have that with your friends and with your cousins and with other relatives. And often siblings see the entire childhood differently.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about your parents and one sibling will say, well, I don't remember that. That never happened.
Yeah.
So essentially, you know, when you're a parent, you really are parenting each child differently, even though you think you aren't.
We have an email here from Steve in Dallas who's asking about the issue of divorce on an only child. Do only children respond differently when their parents break up?
Most children are pretty devastated when their parents break up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's hard regardless.
It's hard to know. I don't believe any studies have been done on it, and I have not investigated that, so I can't answer that.
I was surprised to read, not necessarily surprised, but I hadn't heard this before, that the parents of only children statistically seem to be somewhat happier than the parents of multiple children.
Oh, absolutely, because there are many studies that show as you add children to the family, women's sense of contentment drops, but adding more children does not seem to affect the fathers in any way, other than probably financially, but as you add to your family, women definitely become less happy, and they have more to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's just really hard, and with so many women working today, you know, the balancing of work and family life, and granted, some fathers are helping more, we're still not at 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
So that definitely explains why mothers of one are happier.
Let's speak next to Sandra in Dallas. Hey, Sandra.
Hi. I'm calling from Dallas, and I'm an only child. I'm in my 60s now, and I found that it was really totally affected everything in my life. I feel that my parents did divorce, speaking of that, when I was 10, and I was pretty much stuck between them.
Mm-hmm.
And an only child has that. They have no one else to talk to. I would feel like even if siblings didn't get along, they might share their feelings or something easier than when an only child is in that situation.
Yeah. What do you think, Susan?
Well, divorce affects all children. I was just talking this week to a 34-year-old whose parents just announced that they were getting divorced. And she's quite shaken up by it. But she doesn't talk to her sister. So, you know, every situation is unique and every situation is different. And only children, you know, if you split it down the middle, half of them will say they loved it, they're fine with it. And even in their 60s, and some of the people I've interviewed in their 70s are quite content. Others absolutely didn't like it at all and had, you know, similar issues as your caller when her parents divorced. I mean, sure, it's wonderful to have a confidant in a sibling, but you can't count on that, and you can't decide how your family size based on, I want someone for my only child to lean on.
Mm-hmm. Is there a good way, Susan, for parents of only children to answer the busybodies in their lives who feel compelled to give unsolicited advice about how many kids they should have?
Yes. There's a lot of good ways, depending
some
on
you can
how
say
aggressive
on the radio.
They are. You know, if you want to take a softer approach, you can say, we tried, and it's not, or we're trying, if it's true, and it's not working out.
Mm-hmm.
For the more aggressive people, you can say, I don't ask you about your personal life. Why are you asking me? That usually shuts them up.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, we're perfectly happy. We like our family the way it is. And then a more aggressive answer to that is, I'm not discussing this issue again. And that's usually what you want to say to a sibling, an aunt, a parent, or an in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Because in-laws and parents want more grandchildren.
Right.
So they're going to keep after you. But the... You know, those you're within your rights to hold your ground and not feel guilty about the family size that you have chosen.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we will see, as more and more families raise single children, will we see these stereotypes falling away?
Stereotypes are already falling away, one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no question we will see more only child families as we move on, particularly with our economy. It's the fastest growing family unit right now. And 20 years ago, I called this one child family the new traditional family.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm seeing that come to fruition. It will no longer be the boy for you, the girl for me. You know, women now have equal status, or boys and girls have equal status.
I'm going to have to jump in here, Susan, because we're out of time. Susan Newman is a social psychologist and author. Her new book is called The Case for the Only Child, Your Essential Guide. It's been really interesting. Susan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.